half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. This is Michael Hansen with a Mind Web story that comes from the book The Best from Fantastic, edited by Ted White. This is Chet Oliver's final exam. The chartered spacer from Marsopolis settled into Ed Crowley's private field on her anti-gravs, hardly disturbing a blade of the lavender grass. There was a moment of silence in the thin air, and then the students came out. They weren't all students, of course. B. Barrett Osborne, the writer, was present, and so were Elaine Spaceman and his young son. But most of the passengers were members of Dr. Thomas Lafarge's famous class in Advanced Martian History 482, the pride of the American Academy, and this was their field trip.
"There's one," Charlotte Stevens said excitedly. "There's one. Look at him."
It was a real live Martian, all right. He climbed slowly down out of a baggage truck and walked toward them. He was very tall and slender and awkward-looking, just like the pictures. His skin was reddish, and he had a shock of snow-white hair. His slanted eyes were a deep and liquid green. He seemed to look through rather than at the group standing outside the ship, and he said nothing at all.
"Observe, observe," whispered Dr. Thomas Lafarge. "I told you they never said anything."
"Gosh,"
said Charlotte Stevens.
"Look, Daddy,"
Bobby Fitzgerald said loudly, pulling on his father's sleeve.
"Look at the funny Martian."
"Over here, my good man,"
Professor Lafarge instructed.
"The bags are on the ship. Captain Stewart will show you."
The Martian nodded and went into the ship without a word.
"That was two,"
the professor explained.
"As you know, they have no proper names."
"Well," sniffed Pat Somerset, smoothing her skirt over her silken legs. "He didn't seem very friendly, I must say."
"Oh, that's the way they are. They are like children."
Wilson Thorne, dressed campus style in gray flannel slacks and plaid sport coat, peered out from behind his horn-rimmed glasses, puffed on his Sherlockian calabash pipe, and nodded wisely. "You and I, Professor," his manner intimated. "You and I, we understand each other." They all piled into one of Ed Crowley's sleek transports that was parked on the side of the field. Professor Lafarge knowingly pressed the destination stud and they hummed into motion. The white plaster rock road cut through forests of lavender grass 5 feet tall, and the air was sweet with the smell of flowers. The ranch house, a rambling structure carved out of polished Martian redwood, nestled at the foot of a low range of purple hills. Orange flower trees dotted the hillsides. A soft breeze rustled through the grasses. To their left, they could see the deserted remains of what had once been a Martian shrine.
"Gosh,"
said Charlotte Stevens.
"A characteristic Martian landscape," noted the professor.
"Nuts," said B. Barrett Osborne, a gentleman notoriously contemptuous of any and all sentiments not expressed to perfection by B. Barrett Osborne. John Fitzgerald tried to keep his bad leg out of the way and watched his son's face. Bobby was drinking it all in. It must be pretty wonderful to him, he figured, the way it had been to himself when he had first seen it. The transport stopped precisely in front of the ranch house.
"There's Ed Crowley. Not a man of refinement by any means, but you must remember that the largest extant group of Martians is located on his property."
Ed Crowley, a rotund individual hiding behind a venomous black cigar, rolled up to the transport and waved cheerily.
"Good to see you, what I mean,"
he chortled in the deep, hoarse voice that signified that the great man was well into his second bottle.
"Yeah, it's good to see you, Ed, about giving you up for lost. How are you, Einstein? Hey, good to see you."
Dr. Thomas Lafarge shook his hand with simulated heartiness and introduced his retinue. B. Baird Osborne already knew the great man, of course. He knew everybody.
"Yes, sir. Just in time to get freshened up some and take in a native death dance tonight under the old twin moons. You just make yourselves right at home, what I mean. Boy,
A Martian appeared from around a corner. He looked just like the first one to untrained eyes. And it was funny. No matter how close you stood to him, he seemed coldly far away.
Hello, One, the professor said. How are things?
One nodded his head perceptibly and contributed a sum total of no statements on the state of things.
A genuine Martian, what I mean. You just take a good look at him. He don't mind. One, show these people to their rooms, will you? Anyone care to join me in a shot of bourbon?
That's a silly question of the year, commented B. Barrett Osborne. He linked his arm in that of his host and followed the great man into the ranch house. The others trooped off behind One, whose presence put something of a damper on the conversation. He was so different.
He gives me the creeps,
hissed Pat Somerset, running her slim fingers through her blonde hair.
Shh, whispered Charlotte Stevens. He'll hear you.
Martians sure are funny,
Bobby Fitzgerald said loudly. Wilson Thorne smoked his calabash, looked knowing, and kept close to the professor. They walked through a hall carved out of astonishing redwood, and there were strange pictures on the walls. Outside, as a pale sun floated down behind the Martian hills, the long evening shadows crept through the tall grasses and the wind turned cold out of the north. After they had dressed and put on warm jackets, John Fitzgerald and his son left their room and went to rejoin the others. Silver lamps hung from crossbeams and turned the redwood halls a deep golden brown. The dark paintings withdrew into the shadows and waited with an old, old patience.
What happened to the Martians, Daddy?
Bobby asked, his bright blue eyes shining in his freshly scrubbed face.
We happened to the Martians.
I think they're funny. Why did we kill them?
Well, we didn't kill them exactly. Oh, there were some of them that tried to fight, but they didn't have anything to fight with. No guns, no ships, nothing. Disease got most of them, Bobby. Nobody knows what happened to the rest. They just disappeared.
But why?
I think maybe they had a crystal ball, son. John Fitzgerald tried not to limp as they entered the brightly lighted living room where the others were. He felt vaguely out of place here, even more so than at Marsopolis. He noticed that Pat Somerset had changed into a black satin dress, evidently her idea of just the thing for a Martian field trip. She was giving him the eye as usual, and he tried not to laugh. Charlotte Stevens was listening enraptured to Ed Crowley, who was exercising his host's prerogative of talking loud and long.
Well, when I first came to Mars, there wasn't a first-class bar this side of Marsopolis. Strictly for the birds, what I mean, just a bunch of spacemen. No offense, Mr. Fitzgerald, and scenery, that's all. Me, I took this part of the old planet over and made it into a tourist's paradise. Swimming, night rides under the moons of Mars, fishing in the cold mountain streams, all that junk. Educational, too, what with the old brick piles and Martians and all. I've made this planet into a paying proposition, I'll tell you. And I got where I am today through my own efforts.
Here, here, said B. Barrett Osborne into his bourbon.
Now, you know, I ain't the man to brag, but I've done something with this joint, what I mean. It's got class.
Oh, tell us about the Martians,
Charlotte Stevens breathed.
Well, there were lots of them around once. Ain't that right, Mr. Fitzgerald? The boys on the early ship saw them. But now there's just a few in the cities and on the other land grants, so far as anyone knows. Well, I've got 10 of them right here, and that's the most I ever saw together at one time.
Gosh,
said Charlotte Stevens.
Jeepers creepers, said B. Barrett Osborne.
I'll tell you, them Martians of mine guide the tourists, meet the ships, put on dances, and kind of prowl around adding color to the joint. Me, I'm a tolerant man. I treat the Martians right. I don't see where they got any cause to complain, you know what I mean? Them Martians, they're sort of screwy, but they're just like kids. You got to handle them right.
That, in essence, is quite correct,
spoke up Professor LaFarge.
As you perhaps know, I took a group of Martian gray rats and ran them through some rather intricate maze problems. Their psychological patterns were definitely childlike, and by use of the LaFarge equivalence equation, I was able to apply my findings to the Martians as a whole. You are, I trust, familiar with my monograph on the subject.
Nuts, said B. Barrett Osborne, thus upholding his interplanetary reputation for sarcastic wit. Wilson Thorne puffed on his calabash and solemnly entered the devastating remark in a notebook.
Well, anyhow, it's about time we got this big shebang on the road. That death dance is really the cat's whiskers, know what I mean? Last authentic art form of a dying race and all that stuff. Now, if you'll all just leave your $10 in this little old box here.
Everyone crowded around and deposited $10 in the box, except, of course, B. Barrett Osborne, who naturally was entitled to special privileges because he was such a funny fellow. John Fitzgerald noticed that Pat Somerset was busily engaged in patting his son on the head.
My, what a fine little boy,
she cooed. Say thank you to the nice lady.
Thank you.
Hey, two. Where the devil is that damn Martian?
The students followed the great man out into the night. The wind had died, and it was cold and still under the moons of Mars. John Fitzgerald shivered as he helped Bobby into the transport. One of the Martians took over the manual controls. His tall body was clumsy in the narrow space, and his waves of snow-white hair almost touched the top of the vehicle.
One thing about them natives, they learn fast.
Cultural diffusion, it works both ways.
Ed Crowley picked up a voice amplifier, not that he needed one, and he launched into his prepared commentary.
Now notice the characteristic night flowers blooming in forgotten splendor under the beautiful twin moons of Mars, Phobos and Dimas. That means fear and panic, you know. Fear and panic are the ancient companions of Mars, who back on Earth was thought of as the god of war. It's hard to believe, looking at this peaceful world, that it could ever have been connected with such a thing as war. We're now approaching an abandoned shrine where in bygone days...
John Fitzgerald didn't listen. Glib second-hand sentiment always made him uncomfortable. Personally, he wished that Crowley would shut up. It was as bright as the western plains under a full moon on Earth. The tall grasses were a sea of silver under the stars. The air was clear and cold. Looking at it, you could almost imagine that nothing had changed, that it was all the way it had been before the Earthmen came. The transport stopped, and they all got out and hurried down a path through the motionless grasses. They came to a clearing where rows of stone benches gleamed whitely in the iced light of the moons.
Well, here we are. It won't be long now.
They waited. The stone benches were cold and lonely. The little group of visitors huddled together in the stillness. Pat Somerset fished a perfumed cigarette out of her purse and puffed on it until it lit. The grass was still, the shadows black. The darkness was alive. Across the clearing, movement.
Here come the funny Martians,
Bobby cried.
Now look out, said B. Barrett Osborne.
It's about to begin,
said the professor. The Martians came out of the shadows, and the dance was on. There wasn't any music, or was there? John Fitzgerald wasn't sure. There were no instruments that he could see, and the dancers did not appear to be singing, and yet there was something, a feeling, a rhythm, a silver melody that shivered up your spine. The Martians danced, and they weren't funny anymore. Their white hair stood out vividly in the moonlight, and their slender bodies moved with fluid grace. They belonged, somehow, belonged there in the clearing with the grasses all around them and the purple hills silent in the distance, and the music.
It's a little different each time,
the professor said.
All we need now is Frankenstein's monster to make this party really gay,
said Pat Somerset.
Shh,
whispered Charlotte Stevens.
I think they're cute.
Wilson Thorne smoked his pipe and took frantic notes in his brown notebook. It was a strange dance, quiet and unhurried, almost random in its movements. But there were patterns in the graceful movements of the dancers, Fitzgerald noticed. It was like a slow-motion pantomime. Half of the Martians executed apparently meaningless steps with their eyes closed. The other half circled them slowly and then came in for the kill over and over again. The death dance. John Fitzgerald felt a chill race through his body. The whole thing was eerie. The Martians seemed to kill with knives and hands and guns and rays. They never missed. The Martians had no guns, no rays, he told himself. The dance went on, neither rising nor falling in intensity. There was no emotional buildup, no climax. It just went on.
They are a dying race,
said the professor. I think they're crazy, said Pat Somerset, pulling her fur coat closer around her satin dress.
They're so quaint,
said Charlotte Stevens. Then, as suddenly as it had begun, the dance was over. The Martians faded back into the shadows, and the feeling of music was gone. The clearing was empty.
So that's what we came from Marsopolis to see,
Pat Somerset said. Give me the floor show at the Crystal Room any day.
That's enough, Miss Somerset. I must say I'm disappointed in you, most disappointed.
Pat Somerset smiled coolly at him. She got back into the transport and the others followed her. A Martian was already at the controls.
I've been working on the functional aspects of the death dance,
announced the professor as they hummed through the night back to the ranch house.
My anthropologist friends tell me that such ceremonial dances always have some function in a total culture, whether or not the participants are aware of it. This was true of the old Indian dances back on Earth. You have perhaps seen some of the pictures that were taken of the dances as recently as 1980. And not the real thing, of course, since their culture was hardly their own anymore, and they were just going on with a tradition that had outlived its usefulness. But you get the idea. Those ceremonials were used to integrate the society, to train the children, to dramatize their religions, to enforce all authority, all sorts of things. But there was always a true function, as opposed to what went on out in the open. And this death dance presents an interesting problem. It may take some weeks to work it out fully. My theory is that it represents the resignation of the Martians to their fate. They're dying out, you see, and...
Knock it off, hissed B. Baird Osborne. Spies are everywhere. And the students giggled. Wilson Thorne made another entry in his notebook. Bobby whispered,
Daddy, I want to go home.
John Fitzgerald looked at his son. Funny. He'd had the same idea himself, an inexplicable urge to leave, to get off the planet. Mars was so different from the world that he had known, and yet he had helped to make it this way. And these people... Okay, Bobby, he said quietly. Okay, it hasn't turned out for you the way I hoped it would, and I'm sorry. We'll take a copter to Marsopolis in the morning, and tomorrow night we'll be on the ship to Earth. How'll that be?
Oh, swell.
They went on through the clean, cold air, and the Martian grasses were coated with silver in the moonlight. The next night, all the lights in the ranch house were on, blazing their glare into the darkness. A north wind whined across the fields and lost itself in the rock canyons of the mountains. One of the two small moons was just rising over the horizon, and the stars were bright and cold. Ed Crowley, Professor LaFarge, and B. Baird Osborne were playing Hit the Bottle in front of a roaring fire in the massive fireplace in the great living room. The fire threw out flickering shadows that cavorted playfully among the redwood crossbeams on the ceiling. Ed Crowley shouted,
One.
No answer.
One.
Silence.
Oh, where the devil are those Martians? Haven't seen one of them in hours. Never around when you need them, you know what I mean?
Like children. Just like children. Just like little kids.
Yes, said Osborne, fixing himself another drink. And speaking of children, where are the junior geniuses?
They're throwing a shindig down at the river. Might kind of wander down their way myself a little later. That Pat Somerset is some dish, you know what I mean?
If you like dishes, the great writer said very casually.
Now, wait a minute,
the professor objected.
Now, just you wait a little minute. I'm responsible,
supplied B. Barrett Osborne.
Yes, that's right. I'm responsible, I tell you. I'm responsible for what was I saying?
Forget it, suggested B. Barrett Osborne. Ed Crowley sank into an armchair.
Well, what I want to know is where are those Martians? The old dump feels different.
The wind blew cold in the night. You need a drink, Ed, said B. Baird Osborne. It was chilly somehow in the room. The fire blazed away and the bourbon did its best, but there was a persistent coldness in the air. Loud in the silence, a shutter banged monotonously against the wall. The adjusted Terra clock struck 11.
I'd just like to know where those damn Martians went to.
The shadows played on the walls, and something moved in the dark corner. What was that? B. Baird Osborne asked sharply.
I didn't.
There in the corner. Something's there. The great fire crackled in the fireplace.
One. Is that you?
No answer.
One, if that's you, I'll skin you alive.
Shadows. Ed Crowley hefted a bottle angrily and got to his feet.
For the last time, come out of there.
The thing came out. It was one, right enough, but he wasn't alone. There were others with him. Martians. Quite suddenly, the room was full of Martians. They walked in through the doors and crawled through the windows. They came down the stairs. There were hundreds of them, tall and thin and awkward-looking. Their snow-white hair was vivid under the lights. Their cold green eyes steady, unblinking. They were armed. Armed with guns and rays and tubes and various metallic things which no man had ever seen before. Ed Crowley dropped his bottle.
Here come the funny Martians, said one. Now look out,
said two.
It's about to begin, said three.
The night pressed in against the house.
You talk.
We talk,
agreed one. He kept coming. The three men crouched against the wall by the fireplace, their faces white and wet with sweat.
The guns, the rays, so many of you, where?
There are millions of us,
one said coldly.
Millions, all dead, dying?
We have lived in the caves under the mountains for 50 years,
two said steadily. His green eyes were like ice.
They were quite elaborate caves, and we went there when it became evident that we could not otherwise hold out against the madmen from Earth. We fixed it so that we could not be found, and we went to work. We have powers, you know. We can read minds, and we heard every word that you ever spoke. We sent spies out to learn about your ships and guns, and we made a few improvements of our own. We sent out spies, and you took them in as tourist attractions.
The Martians laughed soundlessly.
One thing about them natives,
three said.
They learn fast. They are like children,
one said. The Martians came closer. They reached out their thin hands and touched the terrified men. They took them out into the cold night and put them in the transport.
Are you going to kill us all?
Asked Professor Lafarge.
Not all, said one cheerfully. Most. A few, like the learned children on the river, we'll keep for tourist attractions, you know.
Professor Lafarge began to sob brokenly.
Notice the characteristic night flowers,
two said ironically as a transport hummed through the stillness. His voice was edged with hate.
Notice them blooming in forgotten splendor under the beautiful twin moons of Mars. We are now approaching an abandoned shrine where in bygone days...
The transport stopped.
No,
whispered B. Baird Osborne. The Martians took them into the shrine where it was cold and still. They had waited a long time.
Don't do it. Don't do it,
cried Ed Crowley, falling to his knees.
We've learned our lesson. We've learned our lesson. We'll go away. Never bother you again. Never. It's your planet, just like always. You can have it back again.
I'm afraid that won't do,
three said tonelessly.
Unhappily for you, we have learned our lesson, too. Mars is old, exhausted. We don't want our planet back.
Well, then what do you want?
Yours, three said. Back at the ranch house, the Terra clock struck 12. The Martians moved in for the kill, just as millions of their brethren were doing all over Mars. with guns and rays and ships spawned under the mountains. Ed Crowley screamed.
They are a dying race, said one.
I think they're crazy, said two.
They're so quaint, said three.
It was all over in minutes. The students had learned their lesson well. Smoothly, inexorably, while fear and panic raced through the night, they took their home back from their teachers. That same morning, with a roar that shook the planet, the great Martian rockets blasted off for Earth. That was Final Exam, written by Chad Oliver. It comes from the book The Best from Fantastic, edited by Ted White, published by Manor Books. I am Michael Hansen. Technical operation for this broadcast by Mary Kay Payne. MindWebs comes to you from WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.